everybody. This is episode 9 of the Microsoft Recap. This is your host, Mike B. What's going on, everybody? As usual, I always got my host with me, Mike Bennett. What's going on, Mike?
What's going on, everybody? It's the other Mike B here.
Yeah, yeah. I think I might change the show. Just call us Bennett and Baker. I mean, do like a 1980s action rom-com and some not rom-com, with the action movies, buddy flicks or some shit.
Bennett and Baker.
I mean, one's above the law. One thinks he's above the law. One thinks he is the law. I mean, we come here to bring y'all the latest in Microsoft news. And today's topics we have, the first topic is going to be a first look at Microsoft's new dual screen Surface Duo, which is going to be running Android. I'm really kind of excited for this product. I think I'm going to try to hold off on getting another phone until this comes out. The next topic that we're going to talk about is lessons from Microsoft's 250 million user data breach. I'm reading the article. It's not really lessons for you. It's more like lessons about the industry as a whole and how to find a good, reputable company that really takes security seriously. And Microsoft did a good job at taking security serious in this fact. And then the last article that we got is talking about how Microsoft's newest internet browser is so good that I forgot I switched from Google Chrome. Yeah, that's some heat for them right there, because I mean they need it right now, because ain't nobody using an Explorer except for like people that just been using an Explorer. They ain't never know no better to switch over.
A lot of companies that got software built on Explorer.
Yeah, and the thing is, they don't want to. They too cheap to try to just go and build something else. It's like, yo, after a while, you got to invest in yourself. But yeah, the first topic that we're going to talk about is that Microsoft is giving that first show of the software behind the Duo, the Surface Duo. If y'all haven't seen the new releases that they did, they presented some new hardware back in October. They had this thing called Microsoft Insight. They usually do it every year. I think it was Microsoft Insight. But they do it every year where they talk about new things that they're planning on coming out with, new technologies, what they've been doing, and you know, just an overall yearly conference type thing. And one of the things that they released, two things that they talked about releasing, they didn't necessarily release them. They talked about coming out with this thing called a Surface Neo and a Surface Duo. The Surface Neo, I think, is going to be they're both going to be double screen tablets, essentially, where it opens up like a book, and on both sides, there's a tablet, there's a screen on both sides. But the one that everybody really, you know, like the tablet one, the one that's supposed to be like 10 inches or whatever, everybody was like, oh, that's interesting. We'll see what happens when that come out. But when they showed off the smaller form factor, the one that was going to be a phone, everybody kind of blew that. It kind of blew people's minds. Like, people kind of like, oh, that's something that I want. Yeah. It's essentially a 5.6 inch phone screen that splits into two, that becomes an 8.3 inch phone. And the difference between this, you know, they have the Motorola Razr that's going to be coming out with what they call a foldable screen. And then they have the Samsung Fold that's already out that has the foldable screen. Both of those are like $1,500 and like $2,000. Yeah, and they both coming out and being, everybody saying, yeah, I don't like neither one of these. But this one is not using the folding paper, I think. I mean, the folding screen, it's OLED, I think, either AMOLED or OLED. But instead of using the folding screen, they're just doing two flat displays that they're connecting with a hinge in the middle. So it has this middle hinge that folds in and out like any other book in the form. But on both sides is essentially a flat screen that essentially connects to each other. You can essentially do things with both sides of the screen. And it kind of looks like the future.
Yeah, it's definitely, I would say that for what they're doing, man, So usual, this is not the first time, of course, that someone's tried to do something like this. But the way they've been able to execute this, man, it looks like this is like they're setting the standard for what the dual screen. Oh my goodness, the word is escaping me. Basically, a dual screen device, how it should operate, how it should look. And I mean, the as long as they, I know it's Microsoft. Do you think they're trying to push Bing as the search?
Yeah. I mean, more than likely, it will definitely have Bing on it. They said that all right. So I mean, even though it's Apple, I mean Microsoft built hardware, it's going to be running Android on it. But Android can be modified and molded into however they want it to be. It's sort of like how they did with Chrome. They essentially took Chrome and made it their own version of Internet Explorer. They're essentially probably going to do the same thing here with this software, where they're going to take Android, strip out all the Googleness of it, and make it a Microsoft product. And yeah, Bing will be at the top of that product.
Right. That's going to be the saving grace, man. It's like, oh, this device is good. Let me go ahead, put some in this search bar real quick.
Right, exactly. And I mean, if they're able to get people to do more searches using Bing, that makes Bing a more profitable product to have people start putting advertisements on. So, I mean, all of this essentially is to probably drive more traffic to Bing and at the end of the day. But also, I feel like, I mean, they got a lot of products. They got a lot of tools. You know, most of their Office productivity suite is available in a mobile format, so they have all of their apps available on Android and iOS. But this will more than likely, this will be like the first device that they've created where it'll be all their mobile stuff on their device, and all you got to do is just get the device. Essentially, it's a phone, so it still has the phone capabilities on it, but it'll also be something that's probably going to be heavily used for productivity. Microsoft has been trying to do this stuff for a while. They have been trying to do this dual display stuff for a long time, and it always failed because they never really went at it full throttle. And
one of the things they benefit. I didn't even cut you off. Jump in there real quick. Is that it seems like Microsoft is kind of jumping onto the open source wave. You know, in the past they were trying to build the operating system and then work on top of it. And it's like, you know, they're kind of like creating a wheel there. And that's how a lot of times things they worked on, they either got slowed up where they had to stop the manufacturing or like, you know, they had to scrap the idea because they're trying to be original in this, but they realized that I think in this wave and it's in the other article as well, I'm talking about Chrome, how they basically, the new Microsoft browser, that they've realized that they would be original with using open source.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they realized that the open source community is eating their lunch because in that proprietary development world, I mean, they always had barriers of entry. You had to pay in order to even be able to develop on this stuff. And Google sort of showed them that if you just open up the platform, you're going to get a way larger community. And if you cut those barriers of entry of just having to even pay to even develop on the stuff, like you cut that barrier entry and your potential for new people to test and create software and stuff like that, that just goes up like triple, quadruple fold, because more people are going to have access to it. And in this case, like Android is essentially an open system. If you are trying to sell it, if you're trying to sell a device, you can essentially strip out Android and not have anything that reminds you that it's Android. Amazon tried to do this a while ago. Amazon did this with the Fire Phone a while ago, and that flopped.
Exactly.
If anybody remembers, Facebook tried to come out with a phone a while ago.
Oh my goodness, yeah,
it was the Facebook phone. That's when they first introduced the bubble heads, and it's been a problem ever since. Like when they had those on Androids, when you had those little bubble heads where you in chat and you got to throw the head down into the center, into the trash to get, yeah, get the chat away. They originated that on this Facebook phone. And then when that flopped, they imported those functionalities into Android. I don't think they did it for Apple because Apple wasn't playing that shit. They don't allow you to do that crazy nonsense.
The stuff over there.
With this. but Android's open up enough where you can just be like, all right, I'm going to try this, create this new random thing that nobody else does, like bobbleheads or whatever, bubble heads, whatever they used to call it. But, yeah, it's just an open enough platform for somebody like Microsoft to go ahead and take it in. Microsoft is not Amazon. They are not Facebook. They base themselves in software. I mean, it's Microsoft is microcomputer software. So like they basically
get a history lesson.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like that's what they do. If nothing else, they good at software. And they'll strip the hell out of this and turn it into something that is theirs. And I mean, at the end of the day, like I said, I've been talking about this for a while. Like, it looks like Microsoft is definitely, if not in bed with Google in a lot of ways, they are deciding to partner up with Google. And Google is one of those companies that just they open up their stuff so that they can work with anybody, so that they can allow themselves to work with anybody. And I mean, who's better to partner up with than your competition, right? It's sort of like one of those things like, enemy of my enemy is my friend right now, it's kind of things. And like when it comes to advertisement, Facebook is Google's enemy. When it comes to like search and like sales and retail sales and stuff like that, using payment transactions, Amazon is their enemy. When it comes to technically Microsoft and Google should be mortal enemies, but it seems like they're definitely working together between Chrome partnerships, between the Android partnerships. It looks like they definitely are working a lot together to try to create a new type of internet, a new type of computing, a new type of world for digital usage today.
Definitely. Microsoft and Google are definitely FWBs, man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, keep the money in Silicon Valley. I don't know. Do what you do. But as long as it makes it a little bit easier for us in the end of the day, and it's not it's not impeding on our privacy and, you know, data collection minus, you know, selling our data for $250. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, I'm happy to see it. And like I said, when it comes out, it's not going to come out till like later this year. But when it does come out, I think that'll be the phone I actually get. Like, I just want to have something it's just a little different. And I kind of like the differentness of it. I'm not really a big fan of what Microsoft has been doing in a lot of ways with some things, but this one is just enough.
Yeah, I remember we did that article when they had that musical.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yo, I mean, they trying to build out, I guess they trying to just put themselves in the room of being like a lifestyle company as well. I mean, not just being hard tech. Yeah, I mean, they want to try to build themselves out to be like, we're community oriented. Yeah, I mean, we care about the people, including y'all people that like musicals and shit. Y'all, if y'all liked, what was that show on Fox? Glow or something like that? Glow Up or some shit like that? It was like a High School Musical. If y'all know what that is. But if y'all like stuff like that, y'all would like this. But I mean, I don't know. Microsoft has some kind of marketing issues that they got to work out, but their tech is always on point. I mean, it served the people for 30 plus years.
They branded themselves as core IT, and they have for the most part, they've delivered on the product, and that's been their saving grace.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking on that is the next article that we have, lessons from Microsoft, Microsoft's $250 million data record, exposure. So can't really say 250 million people's data has been exposed. I can't really say, it's $250 million worth of $250 million records have been exposed. This is something that was found out back in December 2019. I think I'll say this. I think they figured it out in 2019, in December 2019, but they didn't expose it to the public till recently because they wanted to make sure that they patched it up and make sure they do their due diligence on trying to identify who may have gotten access if any data has actually been exposed. But now they're actually letting it be known that the data has been exposed, and you know, they did their due diligence to lock it up. The only thing that actually was exposed, what happened was that they found out that there was a database that essentially blasted out their data in plain text if you knew how to access it. It was one of those things you had to kind of know how to get to it. It wasn't like you can just type in a Google search and find it. But if you
understood... So you feel like it was an inside job then? I know that's off topic, but you feel like there was somebody where, like, because you had to be in the know, right? But somebody internally did work to expose that.
I don't know if they did their work to necessarily expose it, but I mean, these companies do have teams. They have what they call like bug bounties and stuff like that, where they have these teams that are just go out and try to test to see, can they break into these companies' data centers, or can they break into some software or something like that. So I don't think it was an inside job, but I think they had a team of people that tested, you know, their security levels. Try to test to see is Microsoft as secure as they could be, and they found out that they weren't in this particular scenario. The only data that they actually exposed was what they said was customer records based on customer service calls. So data that was collected based on when you know, if you called in customer service, you put in a ticket of some form, and like you had you're going back and forth with their technical support or whatever, with their customer service, that stuff was collected in a database. And, you know, it's very likely that that data could have got collected on your account on your database. But I mean, it wouldn't really have too much personal data on you. That data would really just be, you know, data about who you were, and I mean, not who you were, but like what you had an issue with. And if you had an issue with it, you know, you just collected, you know, you got that issue resolved, and you know, it gets, it wasn't major data nonetheless. It wasn't major data at the end of the day. It was just enough. It was just something that what shouldn't have been exposed that necessarily did. But they did find it and they locked it up pretty quickly. It wasn't one of those things where it was detrimental. It wasn't like private usage. It wasn't like your personal address or your phone number, who you are, what you do online. But it was enough of a breach to say that this thing needed to be locked down. And they locked it down. One of the main things that they did was just point out the fact of how vigorous Microsoft was with actually doing their due diligence. Going about locking the thing down, checking to see who may have actually got access to it, how they got access to it, what data may have been exposed, and actually communicating that to the people so that they know how worried they should be. Sort of essentially like mitigating risk and mitigating the message as it got out there, instead of letting like the news media take over and choose what, you know, they say.
Yeah. Then the propaganda and the yellow journalism get a hold of it, and then become something completely different.
Yeah, they controlled it. They basically controlled it. It's one of those things. But
I like the 5 points they outlined in the article too, talking about, you know, one that sticks out to me is that they said that the number three. So if you all read the article, and the link is will be in the description, but they in the article they give 5 points as to why, like, you know, Microsoft did, like, they are pretty much the standard for how to handle things like this. But number three says it, they showed a commitment to openly recognize the issue and address it quickly proves the trustworthiness of the organization. So, you know, they have certain companies out there where, and I think maybe even Google, they've did this before, where, like, you know, it's always going to be like, of course, security breaches and data leaks and stuff like that. And there's been times where this has happened with companies and they kind of just like, all right, well, it's out there, so, you know, to hell with it. You know what I mean? People know what they know. And it's like, that's not really the best way to go about handling it. How Microsoft handles things, or how they outline it here, is you know, to be able to quickly address it as soon as possible, regardless of like how, you know, how heavy the data is, goes to show that they are, you know, that they're a company that really takes that seriously, and that they're going to do what they need to do. They're going to do their due diligence to uphold to, you know, them being, you know, the IT, the technology company that not just delivers great technology solutions, but then cares about the people as well.
Yeah, it definitely keeps their reputation intact just by being authentic about the attack that happened and dealing with it appropriately. That's the main thing. Like, I mean, getting your stuff hacked is one thing. That's neither here nor there. As many companies have been hacked, as many people that have been hacked, it's neither here nor there, but it's how they deal with it after they've been hacked. And Microsoft did a pretty good job in managing that. And it keeps their reputation intact so that people would continue to trust them as one of the, you know, top leaders of software development. Last topic that we got to talk about is Microsoft Edge. Microsoft's newest internet browser is so good that I forgot I switched from Google Chrome. If you guys already haven't heard, Microsoft Edge is out now. It's the new version of Edge. If you already used Edge before, it's not the same. Now Microsoft has basically took a version of Chrome legally. They legally took a version of Chrome and have cloned it and stripped it out, white labeled it, and turned it into their version of Edge. And I mean, it's pretty good. It's actually really good.
It looks clean too. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it looks clean and it runs fast and it's compliant. That's one of the main things. It's compliant with modern technology, because as you know, as new websites come out, as new web applications get built, they're not building it for Internet Explorer that hasn't been updated in like 9-10 years. They're building it for modern browsers, and they basically have been building it for Firefox, Chrome, and Safari. And they've been just leaving Edge in the dust. And primarily, they've been building it for Chrome. But now that Microsoft has just taken a copy of Chrome, anything that they built for Google Chrome originally now works automatically in Edge.
That's brilliant, man. Like, I feel that. So this goes with what we were saying earlier with the whole how Microsoft is adapting. It's like this open source thing and being able to recreate something is, I feel like, the new wave. You know, it's a principle. They say it really is no like new ideas. It's about the story that you tell about it. And I think that with Microsoft, what they're doing is they have tapped into, I guess, that creative side of being able to take something that, you know, being able to establish the differences with, you know, within like the confines of looking similar as well. Because you look at this thing, I mean, with the, I call it Microsoft Chrome, it, like you said, it runs fast. They do have the, you know, the default search is Bing, which, you know, that give it depending on how you feel about that, you know, whatever, it's a good or bad thing. But, you know, they just overall, they've been able to really step their game up, because they felt they were behind when it came to the whole browser thing. I mean, I think even Safari was over them. You know, Safari is kind of like, you know.
Yeah, and like really Safari is stuff from Mac people.
There's another one that was out there before too. It starts with a Q. I can't remember. You remember?
No, I can't remember Q. I use Opera, which is a good one.
Oh, that's what it was, Opera. Okay.
Yeah. I use Opera, which is a good one. That one is, yeah, with the O logo. Yeah. I think actually that might be a version of Chrome now. I mean, there's so many people that come out with them. Like, if you ever used AVG Free Antivirus, even they have a browser that is basically a version of Chrome that they stripped out and created their own. So many people, because since it's open source, so many people have came out with versions of Chrome that, I mean, it makes sense for Microsoft to just say, go ahead and we're going to just do this too. Right. But, you know, Microsoft has more money to be able to push their product than these other smaller browser development companies. But I don't know, man. Like, I mean, they are definitely... cloning every bit of Microsoft of Google as much as possible. It's kind of it's just real weird. It's real weird because Microsoft, one of those companies that used to always be like, you know, the internet is not really that thing. They didn't really care about the internet for a long period of time. They sort of were the late blossom on the internet in comparison. When it came to the World Wide Web, if anybody that remembers the 90s, they remember that Internet Explorer was really like an answer to Prodigy and what was the joint? Netscape. Netscape is actually Firefox, if y'all don't know. Like Netscape, what came out of Netscape was Firefox.
It was Firefox.
So like, I mean, it's, they've always had that back and forth with having an issue with browser, you know, taking the market share of internet browser searching. But for them to just go ahead and copy this whole thing outright is just one of those things, man. That's just, it just feels weird to see Microsoft actually playing ball with the rest of the industry. I mean, because they always used to be like, this is Microsoft only, this is Microsoft's world. You got to sort of do things in the Microsoft right. world. But now they just don't even care anymore. They just like, man, just use our stuff. I mean, we work with everybody. Just use ours.
I think what's happened is that, Apple has done, they pretty much have like set the tone for what it's like to, you know, have a movement behind technology, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something that there's always been, you know, a back and forth battle between Apple and Microsoft. You know what I mean? Like before anything else, you know, because it was the whole thing of like Steve Jobs. That was even a thing like Steve Jobs versus Bill Gates, you know. That history has been there. Yeah. So, but I think like because like what Microsoft has done is kind of just, you know, they've done an excellent job getting in where they can fit in and then growing in that position. Because with them trying to do that whole, you know, branding things as a, like their branding isn't as strong as Apple's.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they weren't able to play that game of, you know, for us, by us, essentially. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
they
had to get in there and say, you know, okay, well, this is what the game, they adjusted to, you know, the climate of IT. And they've done an excellent job. In fact, I think because of that, by them, we're probably going to start seeing a lot of cross-platform, and I use that loosely as far as, you know, Microsoft using other people's complete platform. You just want to start to see that a lot more within this next decade because that seems to be like, I guess, a catchy wave. But then you said Microsoft has the backing, has the resources to play that same game, but then set themselves apart because of how much they're able to sew into, you know, these projects. I mean, right. I remember you saying like, because I remember I downloaded that before the AVG, like the antivirus software.
Yeah.
Their browser, and it was like, you know, it is, whatever. But the fact that Microsoft was able to take that same, you know, they both of these companies come to the table and take the same thing, but then you see the product that Microsoft was able to develop from it. It's going to show like their prowess of being able to adjust and, you know, their ability to execute on something new. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean the browser world is definitely has changed and it's going to continue to change going forward. Everything with this whole, if y'all know, I mean, no, I know a lot of people haven't really heard of PWAs, progressive web apps, but those are essentially going to be the next phase going forward as we talk about like privacy becoming a major concern. Storage, you know, things that are on people's apps, you know, on people's phones, like keeping your data as your data. Data collection is going to be a big thing. Decentralized apps is going to be a big thing. And a part of those decentralized apps is going to be the whole progressive web app thing. And progressive web apps are web applications that require a web browser. And your web browser has to be up to date and has to be something that's modern. So, and for them to be even to begin that part of the world, they got to be on some platform that helps them like get a running start, and jumping on Chrome is that running start. Yeah, man, that's about it. I think that's about it for the article. I think we pretty ran through that pretty quickly right there.
Yeah. I mean, it was, these are pretty good, man. I mean, it was nothing really to like, I guess, you know, the juiciness, if they want to get it, I mean, they can jump in and like read the article and does. But yeah, man, I mean, I think we, you know, these are just pretty good topics. It's just, you know, Yeah.
I mean, they very straightforward. Right. If y'all got any you know, things you want us to talk about, go ahead and comment on either Facebook, Twitter. You can go to our website and send us a message on there. We got a comment section on there if you want. You can also just comment, send us a message on any of the social medias, on any of our channels. We're always available for stream on the streaming services, your iTunes, your Spotify's, and your Google Music's. And, you know, you can always just Google us and you'll find us pretty, pretty damn quickly. I would say Google us, even though it is Bing, but Bing ain't paying me no money. And, you know, even though this is the Microsoft recap, Microsoft ain't paying us no money. So I'm going to tell y'all right now, Google it. Google. You can Google us and you find us.
If we're getting paid from Bing guys, then guess what?
Yeah. Bang it all day. Yeah, you can bang us. It can be Coke or Pepsi. It is what it is. But
it's Pola Cola, man.
But yeah, man, that's about it for tonight. Go ahead, do the damn thing. Like, share, subscribe. And as always, this is your host, Mike B. Along with my man, Mike B. And we're going to be signing off.
I'll be back. Take care. Peace.
Peace.